Hello, everyone. It is Shanika from Get Checkered. Get Checkered is part of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown and community supported. I am all on my own today. So Caitlin is flying back from Portugal, and Courtney is actually heading to Barcelona, as you heard in last week's episode. So I figured I would take this on today, just me, myself, and I. And I know we normally do a little update section, and I don't really have that much for you all. I got an Aura ring. I know, I feel like I'm giving into a cult, and it's so expensive. It cost me over $500 Canadian dollars. The conversion rate from Canadian to US dollars is just the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. I'm exaggerating, but still, it's not the best. So far, I'm liking it. I'm 4 days in. It tracks my sleep, which is the most important thing to me. A couple weeks ago, Caitlin mentioned that she had finally read the prolific, iconic, The Court of Thorns and Roses. And I finally am starting to read it. So I'm halfway through book one. If you are someone who's read it, please send me a DM or an email. I don't know, wherever you feel most comfortable to let me know your thoughts. It's interesting. So I'm just going to say that. Absolutely not that. And yeah, I don't really have that much more. Life is still the same. Looking forward to Monaco and the Spanish Grand Prix, which are in reverse order, but like up next. Also devastated about Charles crashing that vintage F1 car. Oh my gosh, when I saw the photos, I'm going to be honest with y'all, I thought, because obviously it came out, you know, the last few days or whatever, but I thought that it was just, like, I didn't think it was real, because I was like, there's no way that that would happen to him. But I guess what I should have realized is that would happen to him. Of course, he would crash in Monaco. So thoughts and prayers for that car, thoughts and prayers to Charles, because that hurt to see. On today's episode, we are going to do a deep dive into Sebastian Vettel and what I like to call the rise, the fall, and the rise again of him and his career. We're going to start off with the beginning things and kind of set the stage and then dive into his just like truly prolific career. Like, he's had decades in the sport, and I had so much fun looking all this stuff up, because you can't help but be so impressed with the work that he's done. And so if you're a newbie like myself, can I still call myself a newbie? We've been doing this now for over a year, so maybe not anymore. And know way too much about Formula One. But if you are someone that's new to the sport, I hope this episode teaches you a little bit about one of our favorite people on the grid. So starting with his beginnings, Seb was born on July 3rd, 1987. And yes, if you're wondering, that does make him a Cancer. And he was also born in West Germany. So a quick little history lesson there. West and East Germany did not unite until 1990. So West Germany totally makes sense. But just in case, I know we have some younger listeners, that's why it's called West Germany. Like every single driver that we do a career deep dive on, he started karting at a really young age. So at the age of 3, and then he began racing at the age of 8. And of course, you know, by showing off his talent and skill, racing school came knocking fairly quickly. In 1998, he started at the Red Bull Driving School and won several titles, including the Junior Monaco Kart Cup, which I think is adorable. Bit of a side tangent here. Does anyone know how these driving schools work? So I know this is like a quick Google search away, but I'm just thinking about this now as I'm looking at my notes. I wonder, do they function like a boarding school? You know what I mean? Where there's support for the kids to do schooling and all that kind of stuff. And instead of, you know, their extracurriculars being maybe horseback riding, they go karting instead. Or do families have to manage schooling? Because I think we heard in Esteban's story that his family kind of managed that for him. I just don't know. If you are someone that signed up to this driving school, do they cover all of it? You know, the training that you need for karting, but also so that you can, you know, learn how to do math, learn how to read, that kind of stuff. If anyone knows, shoot me a DM because I'm not sure. So Seb joined Open Vehicle Carts in 2003, and in 2004, he won the Formula BMW ADAC Championship. He had 18 victories in 20 races, and he did race some pretty well-known drivers, including, the names always destroy me. Jan, we'll say Jan, Shero, and Sebastian Bumi. One of the two. So I did some quick little research on these drivers, and what I think is really interesting is that even in 2004, which, you know, feels like eons ago, a lot of them still dealt with the same issues that we see now. So when I was looking at these drivers to get a better sense of who he competed against and who he, you know, learned with or came up with, a driver called, his name is Dominic Jackson, it stood out to me because he dealt with the same thing that we see now, which is the lack of funding. So he didn't complete in a full series championship because of lack of funding. And it really makes you consider that, hey, the sport has had this issue around really talented drivers just not getting a chance because of money 18 years ago. And here we are in 2022, and it's still a topic of conversation and something that we talk about a lot on this podcast. And yeah, so sorry, I just wanted to mention that. Jumping back to Sebastian Vettel, also chaotic. Can we talk about it? Two side tangents already, and we're like 5 minutes into this episode. This is what happens when I'm alone. So Sebastian Vettel drew attention from Formula One teams, including the Williams, who let him test for them, and then also BMW Sava F1, which had him test for them too. I really wish that BMW was back on the grid. I think historically it'd be nice to have that lengthy narrative. Obviously Sava and versions of it still exist and on the grid today, but I'm just saying it would be nice to have that there. In 2007, Sebastian Vettel led the Formula Renault 3.5 series, and then he got the call that we all want if we're racing, maybe not me, to be a driver for BMW Sauber F1. So we're going to dive into what his experience was like there, what his initial role was, and how it morphed into something else, and the rise of his incredible career just after this ad break. This episode of Get Checkered is brought to you by Inventures, your front row seat to what's next. Register now for Inventures 2022, where you can learn, share, and be inspired by the startups, entrepreneurs, investors, and global thought leaders who are redefining the future. Inventures runs June 1st to 3rd in Calgary and online, featuring more than 150 sessions, over 250 speakers, international keynotes, expert panels, startup pitch competitions and events, networking opportunities, and so much more. Reserve your pass now at adventurescanada.com. That's InventuresCanada.com. And I mentioned it last episode, and you're going to hear it for the entire month until I do it. I'm actually speaking on a panel at Inventures. It's on June 2nd. We're talking about entrepreneurship in the post-COVID era. You can see me using air quotes. But also, what does that mean for the ecosystem? Coming from the angle of ecosystem supporters, so my job as an advisor over a platform, but also investors and the entrepreneurs themselves. So if you're interested, I would love to have some folks. Could you imagine the overlap that someone at Inventures also listens to my podcast? Absolutely insane. But I want to be asked tough questions about the ecosystem and what tech looks like. The stream is also under the redefining capitalism stream. So if you're curious about any of this, head to InventuresCanada.com. All right, talking about the rise of his career. So his time at BMW was short-lived. If I could say it was the shortest chapter of his book, but even with his time there, he left a lasting impression. So he was promoted to test driver in 2006, like I mentioned, and there was some interesting things that happened because he was permanently given a seat and he became Sauber's third driver at the 2006 Turkish Grand Prix when the former incumbent, so that was Robert Kubica, I believe, replaced Jacques Villeneuve as the second driver. So they were paired up together, having a good time, potentially, I don't know. and during his test debut, Vettel actually set the fastest time in the second practice, which is absolutely insane. He also, that weekend, became the youngest Formula One driver to participate in a Grand Prix, as he was 19 years and 53 days old. So absolutely insane. He was confirmed as BMW's test driver for 2007. And then following Kubica's crash at the 2007 Canadian Grand Prix, he was named as his replacement. He started in seventh position and finished in eighth, and then ended up becoming the youngest driver to score a point in Formula One. Unsurprisingly, of course. Toro Rosso, Red Bull's junior team, came calling. So for those who don't know, Toro Rosso is now AlphaTauri. And he went all the way back home. What's interesting here, though, is that BMW had to release him from his contract because he had already signed with Red Bull. Again, these signees kiddies when they're literally children, when they're in the driving school. So Red Bull didn't really have much of a leg to stand on. What I do think is interesting, and this is another side tangent, it really made me wonder when I was reading all about this, what is going to happen with Alex Albon and Williams? We're a few races into the season and Alex is doing so well, which I think makes all of us so happy. But Williams really needs a driver that they can build the team around. And as much as Nicholas Latifi has been there for 3 or 4 years now, he just isn't that driver. So I don't know. I just feel like it's a thing to keep an eye on as we move through the season, is how this stuff is going to be handled. And now this is officially my third side tangent, but I just want to say, it's just like an interesting little note. His teammate was Sebastian Bourdais. I did a good job with that last name. During the Japanese Grand Prix, Seb was on his way to get his first win when a crash into Mark Webber under a safety car caused both vehicles to retire. And this was the beginning of a very dramatic feud. And I don't know what it is about these drivers. When you look at them now, decades into their career, they're just in a totally different place. But back then, especially in these early days, especially because he was 19, they were quite feisty. So some of the details, Lewis was leading the race and with Webber in second and Vettel in third. During the safety car period, Vettel crashed into Webber, forcing both cars, like I said, to retire. There is some evidence that points that it was actually Hamilton's behavior that behind the safety car that actually caused the crash. But Webber didn't hold back exactly. And he said, "It's kids, isn't it? Kids with not enough experience. You do a good job and then they fuck it all up." Yeah, I mean, I get it. I would be upset. And they always get upset when someone crashes into them. So I would be upset too. At the Italian Grand Prix, Vettel became the youngest driver in history to win a Formula One Grand Prix, and he was aged 21 at the time and 74 days old. And he closed his time with Toro Rosso that year in winning the 2008 Rookie of the Year at the Autosport Award. So as you can imagine, a few flashy wins, a few record-breaking instances, plus an accident that leads to a fiery personality and a feud that goes on for years, which we'll dive into, Sebastian Vettel was on the rise. And we'll dive into the things in his career that made things a little bit more difficult as he went on, but also the peak right after this ad break. This episode of Get Checkered is brought to you by the Alberta Blue Cross. Life as a business owner can be hectic, to say the least. Alberta Blue Cross understands that. They offer flexible health, dental, life, and disability coverage for your employees. Even better, you can let your staff enroll and manage their coverage at any time and on any device. This makes life easier for them and for you. You've got this when it comes to group coverage for your small business, and Alberta Blue Cross has got your back. To learn more and explore your options, head to ab.bluecross.ca. I actually have Alberta Blue Cross on top of having coverage for my employer. Insurance? I think that's like a common thing. I know that we have a good split of our audiences in the States. We still need insurance up here, folks. It's one of those things where dental is very expensive. Prescription is very expensive. I'm very happy with my Alberta Blue Cross. So if you're in the province, go check it out. All right, let's talk about the peak of his career, because this is what I like to call the Red Bull racing era. And it's something that it was so exciting for me to dive into, because obviously watching Formula One, when I started watching, it's very much in this Mercedes dominance, right? So to go back in time and really see just how well Red Bull was doing, plus also like how well Seb's doing, and how that partnership just was amazing for the sport in general, was really exciting to me. So with his performance at Toro Rosso, it was just not surprising that he was given the upgrade to Red Bull. So he got the seat that everyone really wants when they're coming out of Toro Rosso. He ended up replacing the retired David Coulthard. What I think is interesting, he was paired with Weber. So remember, earlier on, they got into an accident. We know that this is the beginning stages of a potential, not even potential, fully accurate feud, that it's something that piqued my interest that they were actually being partnered together. So in his first season, Seb won the Chinese Grand Prix, the Japanese Grand Prix, Abu Dhabi. He also won in Great Britain. But to add to their feud, like I mentioned, between him and Weber, at the Turkish Grand Prix, Vettel was running second behind Weber. And of course, because this was the era where Vettel was really trying to win, he tried passing Weber. The two of them collided, put Vettel out of the race. And to this day, neither driver has accepted responsibility for the collision. It's just one of those things. Maybe we call it a racing incident nowadays. Not sure. In 2010, Seb became the youngest world champion and Red Bull topped the constructors. In 2011, he started the year off strong. But this is where there was a lot of reports that I found just around the FIA's intervention. And the reason why I paused is because a lot of these rules came through sort of in the middle of the season, after the season had started. So at the European Grand Prix, the FIA enforced a ban on engine mappings. I don't really know what that is. I know I should have looked that up. Sorry, y'all. But at the time, there was press that said, oh, this is the FIA attempting to basically stop Sebastian Vettel from doing as well as he was doing at the beginning of the season there. And then the British Grand Prix, another rule change came in, which was targeted at the blown diffusers. Again, not 100% sure what that is, but this is coming from Red Bull. At the time, Red Bull said they believed that the change would cost them about half a second per lap. So it's just weird stuff with the FIA. Again, this is over 10 years ago, and it's just never ends, truly. And I can't really wrap my head around why, but anyways. In Italy, he took his 10th pole position of the year and joined Ayrton Senna as the only driver to have taken 10 pole positions in two separate seasons. In our last episode, or the episode before, we actually did a dive into Ayrton's career and why he's so prolific. So please go check that out. He completed this year with Okay, check this out, folks. 15 poles, 11 victories, 17 podiums from 19 races. He also earned a record total of 392 points. Absolutely insane. Just a league of his own kind of driver. In 2012, he also became the third driver to acquire three consecutive championships behind Fangio and Schumacher. In 2013, the feud between Webber and Vettel hit a fever pitch. This incident's pretty well known. There's actually, if you were to Google like Sebastian Vettel controversial moments or something like that, this is one that's always mentioned in those lists or any of the listicles that focus on his career. So Mark Webber was leading the Malaysian Grand Prix with Sebastian Vettel right behind him. Team orders came in. Christian Horner said, all right, folks, hold position. We got to have a 1-2 finish with Webber coming in first. So that's where they were at. However, with a few laps remaining, Vettel said, fuck that, ignored the instructions and attacked Webber, eventually overtaking him and winning the race. Webber was furious after the race and refused to join festivities after his team's victory. Vettel apologized initially, but then he took it back. Oh god. And it was said that his apologies seemed empty anyways, because, you know, he got the points. He purposely ignored a direct order. So I was reading more into this, and what's interesting, I think, because, you know, you have this sort of changing of the guard, right? Like, you have Sebastian Vettel, who's doing so well at this team, and Mark Webber had done so well before. Christian said, when he was asked about this, that, like, yes, of course, he defied a direct order, but that Mark Webber had done that before. So, you know, just that's it. They both done it. That's kind of where we're at. Sebastian Vettel sealed his fourth world title at the Indian Grand Prix, which, oh my gosh, I love that they have one there. And because of, you know, this feud with Webber and everything like that, throughout the season, he was booed a lot, and just by spectators, by media, sometimes by the other drivers. And he said, and I quote, "It's very difficult for me personally to receive boos, even though you haven't done anything wrong." I'm going to put a little asterisk here, because I do think we don't like any of the drivers getting booed ever. I think it makes me feel very uncomfortable, because these people are putting their life on the line for your entertainment, right? Unless they are getting paid, of course, too. And I'm not denying that they're getting paid tens of millions to do so. But I just found it very weird, and it feels very much like a zoo, that these drivers can't just exist in the space that they want to take. And that people, spectators who have no idea what it's like to be in that seat, no idea what it's like to compete at that level, boo them and say how horrible they are. However, to play a little bit of devil's advocate, defying the team boss, not a great look. And this was an era of Vettel's life where he was very feisty. You know, he would say what was on his mind. And I think it's just one of those things about being in your early 20s. You don't really think through what you're saying. You know, created some situations with his own teammate, which people don't love. So I also understand why there would be certain reactions. I'm just saying, I see both sides of it. I get it. In 2014, Vettel was paired with a new driver, Daniel Ricciardo. And as F1 stands, we all know what happened with Danny Ric joining the team. But in general, if we take the Daniel Ricciardo out of it, 2014, which is not a great season for Red Bull, they really, really struggled with reliability issues. And Vettel ended the season as the first defending champion to fail to win a race during a season since Jacques Villeneuve in 1998. So just overall, not great for them. And when you look at just what Red Bull was struggling with, it was, like we said, reliability issues, but it caused a lot of the drivers to not be able to finish races, which is the most important thing. The only way you can get points is by finishing. It was always a dream of his to jump ship to Ferrari. And I think a lot of us, I think as fans, were hoping this 2014 season was just a blip on the radar, you know, that he was still going to continue rising and hit, that Red Bull wasn't just the peak of his career. But I believe his time at Ferrari was just marred with a lot of difficulty. So he said, and I quote, "The next stage of my Formula One career will be spent with Scuderia Ferrari. And for me, that means the dream of a lifetime has come true. When I was a kid, Michael Schumacher in the red car was my greatest idol. And now it's an incredible honor to finally get the chance to drive a Ferrari. I've already got a small taste of what the Ferrari spirit means when I took my first win in Monza in 2008, with an engine from the prancing horse built in Maranello. Scuderia is a great tradition in the sport, and I'm extremely motivated to help the team get up back on top. I'll put my heart and soul into making it happen." So he went to Ferrari, trying to forget that 2014 season, but with his eyes wide open and with so much excitement. He talks about Schumacher a lot and looking up to him, and he's not the only driver to have Michael Schumacher as an idol. So we're looking forward, folks. Look into Ferrari as another opportunity for him to dominate, but just in a different car with a different team. So in his first year, he won the Malaysian Grand Prix, which is his first race win in over a year. And it was the first win for Ferrari in almost 2 years. Again, proving just the struggle that 2014 was for Red Bull, but also where Ferrari was at in their development of the car and how they weren't on top. Halfway through the season, Vettel was 42 points behind championship leader and Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton, and he ended the season in third place. And he had 3 wins and 13 podiums, so really good things. But he had said that the season was a miracle, meaning that with where the car was at, where the other cars were at, he just didn't expect to even be finishing in third. But this is where it's just challenges, folks, just tons of challenges. So though this seems like this is the starter year, you know what I mean? 2015, starting in Ferrari, this is the year. You know, you have some struggles, you finish in third, fine. We know the car's not in the best place, but there's next year with this great driver. In 2016, it was not a great year for him. He did achieve 7 podium finishes during the season, but he didn't achieve any race wins, which is horrid. In 2017, though, Ferrari had way more luck developing the car, and there seemed to be real power behind the engine and that they were moving in the right direction. He won Australia, Bahrain, Monaco, and the Azerbaijan Grand Prix was a bit of a controversial one. I'm sure you've seen these clips. I'll make sure to put them in the description of the podcast so you can go see them yourself, because it is like insane behavior. Sebastian Vettel rammed into the back of Lewis Hamilton during a safety car period. Is anyone getting Abu Dhabi flashbacks? Just me, just saying. He then pulled alongside Hamilton with both cars coming in contact again. Absolutely insane behavior. And the whole reason why Seb said, like with him slamming into the back or ramming into the back of Lewis, the concern that he had or what he said happened was that, oh, well, Lewis brake checked me. However, when the FIA did an analysis on that, that wasn't true. So Vettel took full responsibility after that and issued a public apology and committed a huge amount of personal time for the next 12 months to educational activities across a variety of FIA championships and events. In Mexico that year, Vettel became the fourth driver in Formula One history to claim 50 pole positions. And this is where Verstappen, who has kind of been just non-existent in the storyline, kind of comes into play too. So Verstappen took the lead from Sebastian Vettel at the start before Vettel collided with Hamilton. And after that, Hamilton won his fourth title, so it didn't really impact Hamilton too much. this is the first time in his career that Vettel actually failed to win the World Drivers' Championship, having led it at some stage during the season. So, you know, just had a great start, had some little snafus along the way, but 2017 wasn't the season for him either. 2018, still with Ferrari, he made, this is an interesting season because if from some of the things I was reading from the fans, or, you know, blogs written by fans, is that this was just a season full of mistakes and uncharacteristic mistakes for Sebastian Vettel. At the Chinese Grand Prix, he hit Verstappen, he collided with Valtteri at some point of one of these races. He clipped a sausage curb in one of the races, broke a part of his front wing and caused some understeer, and lost the downforce. And this was at his home GP. He had another accident with Lewis. So 2018 was very uncharacteristic for him. 2019 rolls around. Enter his new partner, who replaces Kimi Raikkonen, Charles Leclerc. So this season, 2019, is actually really well documented in Drive to Survive. And I encourage you to watch it because you do get that behind the scenes sneak peek. I'm not going to dive too deep into it, but I think that the best way to sum this all up is that the car wasn't the best. The team morale was in such a weird place, and Sebastian was clearly frustrated and very publicly frustrated, right? Like, there were so many articles coming out at the time about him kind of bashing the team, bashing the development of the car, and he just clearly wasn't happy. And yeah, it just wasn't the best season for him. But there are some highlights. So he took pole position in Canada here at the Montreal Grand Prix. And it was his first pole position in 17 races. Oh, which is like kind of devastating for me when I think about it. This is also where he did one of his, again, iconic clipped a ton videos, but midway through the race, there was a snap of oversteer that caused him to go wide onto the grass. Sebastian received a 5-second time penalty from the stewards, who believed he had returned to the track in an unsafe manner and forced Hamilton off track. Vettel crossed the line in first place, but lost his victory as a result of that penalty. After the race, he swapped the number one in two signs in front of Hamilton's Mercedes and the empty spot, which was supposed to be for his car, as Vettel had parked his car at the beginning of the pit entry. You need to watch this video, folks. Like I said, I'll make sure to link it in the description because it is, it's something, okay? It is definitely something. I was like, there's no way he's doing, oh yeah, he's doing that. Okay, that's happening. So you need to watch it yourself. In this season, so 2019, Ferrari, which is the golden standard for F1 that's been in the sport since its inception, that Michael Schumacher has been a part of with these like iconic drives, but iconic cars, iconic drivers, only finished sixth in the constructors' standings. It was their worst results they had since 1980. And devastating in terms of points for Sebastian Vettel. He only ended up with 33 points, which was the lowest he's ever had in his Formula One career. So as I said, we were going to talk about the rise, the fall, and the rise again. So you're probably wondering, what the hell is a rise again, Shen? So right now, Sebastian Vettel is with Aston Martin, and it's not going so well for the Aston Martin team right now and stuff and things like that. It's just not going great for him there. However, why I say that this is a rise again, even though he's had a few tough years at Ferrari, after leaving Ferrari, is that he genuinely seems happy. Like at Aston Martin, yes, things are not going well. Okay, they're not finishing the points, there's accidents, there's all these other things, starting in the pit lane, there's a lot of things that are working against them right now. But he seems genuinely happy. And I think that happiness comes from him really finding his voice and sort of purpose in the sport. He's more than just a driver. And we see that with what he does in terms of advocating for environmental issues and social justice in general. This week, he called out the FIA and has gone for their necks saying that the jewelry ban is targeting Lewis Hamilton. It was like specifically been put in place to target Lewis Hamilton, which I thought was a good thing. But I also think he's truly just comfortable in who he is as a person. Sebastian Vettel is older now, right? He's in his 30s. I believe he's 34, if I did my math correctly. He seems just to be happy to be in a car. Of course he wants to run races. Of course he wants to finish in the points, but he just seems content. And there's something about watching someone who's just genuinely happy, genuinely sure of what his legacy is going to be, which we'll chat about in a second, try and continue to drive in a car. When I was looking at his whole career, what I was trying to figure out is what is his legacy, right? Because his legacy is those 4 years at Red Bull where he truly kicked ass and where the car was in top form and he won and won and won and won. That's a piece of it. His legacy also comes in the form of his kids, their relationship that he's had forever, and his beautiful children. But I also think it comes in the form of the things that he's leaned into now in his 30s, the stuff that he talks about every single day, and the fact that he is just truly not afraid. And maybe that's something that comes in your 30s. I don't know. I'm edging a little bit closer to it, dear God. But he truly doesn't care. At the last race, we saw him with his underwear on the outside of his suit, his driving suit, walking around. He isn't afraid to speak up and create opportunity to have real conversation about the issues tied around the sport. And I think that that will be a really important part of his legacy as he goes forward. So that is today's episode, folks. It's a bit of a quick one, 30 minutes, maybe less, but it's because I'm alone. So I hope that you enjoyed that quick little history of Sebastian Vettel. Like I said, the rise, the fall, the rise again. And that you just enjoy this episode. If you are looking to connect with me or my co-hosts, we are Get Checkered on every single platform. And that includes TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. We don't have a Facebook account. I say that every episode, but it's because I work in marketing. So I'm just mentally going through everything. And we have a website, getcheckered.com. There will be a blog post out later this week, reviewing Andrew Newey's book. So thank you, Nicole, for that. And yeah, reach out to us. So you can DM us on any of those platforms. You can also send us an email, which is getcheckered@gmail.com. And if you also want to be a part of whatever we're building here, which we've talked about a lot over the last 2 or 3 weeks, that there's like opportunity and a lot of stuff and we're just trying to figure it all out, please don't hesitate to reach out. We are looking to find ways to incorporate more voices to talk about the sport, and especially in the way that we like talking about it, right? To talk about the issues that matter to us. So please don't hesitate to reach out. I promise that we are welcoming and fun. And with that, folks, I am going to say goodbye.